Hi there. I just called and hung up because I wanted to see if you said leave a message after the beeparoni, but you didn't. But it's still fun.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Special, special, special. We take your calls. Boop, 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 boop. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. I'm super excited for this.
Yeah. Hello, listeners. Thank you all so much for calling in. And spoiler, if you enjoy that Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting, you're going to hear a lot of impressions of it from people calling in, which delighted me every time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that shortly. But first.
Yes. But first, also side note, I've started misspelling Tara's name.
Oh.
How long have we been working together?
Fun.
But it's like, oh, Aranio. Great. That's not going to work. Anyway. There is no again with this this Friday because July has five Fridays. Dick. But this Thursday, July 28th, our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up will get Again With Them, which is our July digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG. As always, we must insist and require that you not listen to their podcast yourselves. We are professionals. $5 is a tiny price to pay for you to preserve your sanity and let Jenny and Tori chip away at what's left of ours.
And chip they do. My
oh,
God.
Oh, boy, do they chip. Chip-a-rooney.
That said, you can start looking forward to Again With This 106. Let's watch Vanessa Estelle Williams in her debut episode of 911. Vanessa Estelle Williams is, of course, the former Vanessa Williams who changed her professional name because of the other Vanessa Williams. That is going to drop on Friday, August 5th. The episode is on Hulu. We will link it in the show notes if you want to watch it. So all of that and so much more is available to you, patreon.com/againwiththis. All right, shall we hear some calls?
Yes.
Okay, I grouped them into questions and comments. Let's do the questions first, starting with Rebecca.
Hi, Tara, Sarah, and Dave. This is Rebecca. Firstly, thank you for doing the Lord's work. I love you. Secondly, I know the acting on 90210 leaves much to be desired, but my question is, if you had to choose a scene of solid acting for each of the original six of 90210, what would they be? I, again, thank you for doing the Lord's work. I adore you all. I look forward to your podcast every week in much gratitude. Bye-bye.
First of all, I love that she said the original six. I want to know which two she just does not acknowledge.
Exactly.
But shall we go down the list of the original eight and see if we matched or if perhaps, spoiler, there were some where you were like, I got nothing.
Sure.
All right. Shannon Doherty. Mine is the lead up to the I Hate You Both park scene. I mean, that is obviously great, but it starts being great when they're still in the house and she knows what's coming and she's just tense. It's a lot of nonverbal acting, but I think she really nails it. That's mine for her.
That's a good one. I actually had trouble narrowing it down for Shando, but I'm going to go with when she's sobbing to Jim that she just can't cope with her heartbreak over Dylan. And Jim also looks bereft, and it was some good acting from him. That was a... I mean, it was hard to watch, but it was like a really real moment for the show. So, yeah, that's my pick for her.
That's a good one. Jason Priestley. This is one of the ones I had a hard time with. So I decided to go for a funny one and chose Wasted and Shirtless on the hood of his car at the rave, high out of his mind. This is, of course, pre-Barb Graffito. Sarah D. Bunting, did you have
more's
for
the
him?
Pity? Yeah, they play rough in the City of Angels, that junior league. I went with his Puck/Tuck impression in the Real World episode.
Yep.
He calls someone geese at some point, I think. Mm-hmm. And just for some reason, it's like this was almost no prep, I feel like, for Jason Priestley. And I was like, this is this is opening a window into some potential for this character to not be hateful. And so, I've always liked that. That and like the old aviator helmet just, I don't know, makes me laugh every time. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's a good one. Luke Perry, from, of course, the Inner Child episode, just kidding. I went with a rare later series pick, when he's saying goodbye to Jack in season 10. I think both of those actors do a nice job. You can tell they really liked and respected each other and that this was a real valedictory because it was the show's final season too. And,
I actually had that as an honorable mention.
Oh,
for him when he opens his door and like it's fading to black, the episode, and he opens his hotel room door and like 700 things are on his face and he looks about 10 years old. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go with that because even though it was fucking buried in season 10, it was good.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Jenny Garth, we give her a lot of shit, and she deserves it. But I think we said at the time, and I will say it again, the aftermath of her rape in late season 9, I think she underplayed it in a really smart and effective way. She just could have leaned into it if they had, God forbid, given the storyline to Tori Spelling. I shudder to think how it would have come out. But I think she did a great job with that very hard material.
She did. I'm surprised we didn't match because I went with he didn't even bring a blanket.
That's
like slumber was party
on my
was.
List. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was very good in that.
Yeah. Agree. Ian Ziering had a hard time with this one. Although same. I like him, I don't necessarily think he is a gifted thespian most of the time. And so I'm going to go with one of my favorite moments from one of the worst episodes.
I think we matched.
Our shortest podcast, the one where the rest of the cast goes to Magic Mountain and he ends up getting embroiled with the scammer at the Peach Pit. And then finally, Burt Reynolds shows up for this cop and a half meet and greet. And we get to see how many of Ian Ziering's acting tics he stole from Burt Reynolds. The two of them in a scene together was great acting, maybe not. Enjoyable acting, for sure.
I actually went with, this is our most despised episode, I think. It's a Totally Happened in Life. But
yes!
I went with his eyebrow waggle as Santa, and then the mustache falls off. Like, there, again, is this great acting? No. But, like, when Mrs. Teasley is like, fucking Sanders, I can't stay mad. Mm-hmm. Like, same.
Yeah.
Pride of Essex County, Ian Ziering.
God bless. Gabrielle Carteris, harder to narrow this one down because I think she's just always actually good, but I decided to go with her from early season 2 in the truck with Chris Suter, hearing about his girlfriend for the very first time when she thought they were on a date and they're not. Tough stuff for poor GC, and later in that episode gets the shit slapped out of her by Shannon, or the other way around. I forget. One of them slaps the other in a scene and it's great.
Yeah. I actually went with a scene that, like, I hate it. I hate the storyline. I hate that they made her do it and she's even styled like shit. But when she's talking to the baby that she thinks she's not going to keep and she starts sobbing, that was like she was going somewhere.
Yeah.
G Cart. And it's hard to watch, not just because of the sort of politics and very surfacey treatment of it on the show's part.
Yep.
But because this happens on the show. Sometimes the actors are like, oh, you know, well, we showed up to work, so let's just give you 100%. And it's like,
yeah.
Oh, this could have been good. Now it's this. But yeah, she's tough because she is always good, but then they give her so much. They give her so much humiliating garbage to do that.
Yes. Yeah. She's such a punching bag character on the show.
Yeah, it's hard to thread that needle for this question.
Yeah, but I thought of that too, and I only decided against it because, as you said, it's a bullshit storyline that we hate. But yeah, that was the highlight of it because of what she brought to it, not because of the writing. Brian Austin Green, I decided to go with something that aligned with his gift for, let's say, portraying Lord Pissface-ness. The scene where he doesn't realize he's on a hot mic in the DJ booth while he's getting interviewed by Brandon for The Blaze after Scott's death. And it ends in, like, it doesn't matter what you say about someone after they're dead. It matters how you treat them when they're alive, which is true. And I think he does capture, like, the pain and the regret and the shame that he has about the end of his time with Scott and how their friendship had fallen apart. So that's my pick for him.
Yeah, I actually went with a semi-related. I think yours is better, but I went with the one where I think I actually captioned this scene, two buildings fucking, because everybody's jackets were so gigantic. But yes. I think it's when he's at Jack's funeral and David is sort of like the lemon that cuts through the treacle of this episode, trying to do something and be Emmy bait. And is like, look, I know we barely talk, but... And he, like, the character generally, like, his piss-faciness is perfect in this episode because he's like, Kelly, you're being a jackass. Get a dress on and go. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard. It's not about you.
Yes.
And he has some good, just direct, real moments. So, yeah.
Finally, dear Tori Spelling, this is one of my favorite moments for her. Again, not great acting, but when she and Brenda are out for dinner their first night in Paris, they accidentally order calf brains. They don't understand what it is. They get served it. They think it's going to be veal. It's definitely not. Then Brenda looks it up and tells her what it is. And Tori just opens her mouth and the brain falls out. It's one of the rare comedy moments, and I talked about it at the time, where she doesn't, like, try to Lucille Ball all over it. Like, she just, I mean, she literally throws it away, and it's so much funnier for that. I mean, the editing is part of it too, but that's my tiny non-spoken moment for Tori Spelling.
I'm going to go with prom. Very convincing drunkenness, and especially in the photo series where she's just like pawing David's face. David's like, oh God. So... Yeah, I mean, again, acting, maybe not, but you would be surprised at just how many actors can't do drunk.
It's true. Oh my God, we did it for all eight. Congratulations to us both. And thank you for the challenge, Rebecca. That was,
that was
hard.
A tough one.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, let's hear from Anthony.
G'day, Tara. G'day, Sarah. Look, I know you're hearing the Australian accent and thinking, oh, it's Christmas shit. But no, he's very busy at the moment designing the new uniform for all the staff down the Outback Cafe. See you, Sarah. This is a friend of the podcast, Anthony. Most of you might know me as AnthoBuzz on the Discord chat and also as Laura Leighton Fan on Instagram. I'm calling in all the way from country Victoria, a little town called Ballarat in Australia. Just wanted to say thank you. And say how much I love and adore the podcast and the work that you all do, including you, Dave. Hello.
Hey.
And just, thank you. Absolutely love it. I look forward to each and every episode that comes out from the email that let me know that the episode has gone live, to the visual aids, the Patreon bonus episodes, the Discord chat. It's like literal pieces of highlights that are spread out through my entire week. And I could not appreciate or love it any more than what I already do. I do have a question for you, which is if you could take a cast member from the core series, from any series, and bring them into a series regular role today, who would that actor be? Who do you think deserves or would love would or you would love to see in a back on our TVs today? Thank you. And thank you. All right, I can't wait for the next episode. All right, bye. P.S. I love you, Dave.
I think I love Anthony. He should have a podcast. Those pipes, my God.
Yeah. I know. He's too busy being Chris Marchette, though. Now we know. Now it can be told. Anthony, that is really a delightful message. Thank you so much. We appreciate you as well and all the many Laura Leighton properties that you have pointed us towards over the years. And she is my pick, definitely. Put her at the center of something. She can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was my obvious pick too. So I'll come up with someone else. But when I interviewed her last year, when she had a one-shot appearance on The New Dynasty, when I wrote it up for Decider, I said like this should be her springboard, and I compared it to when Marsha Cross had her arc on Everwood, and like 6 months after the end of that, she was headlining Desperate Housewives. Like, you know, Laura Layton has worked. She was in like over 100 episodes of Pretty Little Liars. She's never gone away, but she definitely, I always wanted more of her. I mean, I wanted more of her in Melrose Place too. And this is not just pandering for Anthony. Like, that's my legit pick. But having said that, I'm going to say Lindsay Price from Late 90210. I think she's really charming. She has a lot of star quality. She, you know, probably doesn't have to work anymore because she's married to Curtis Stone, another fine Australian. You know, he works all the time. And so I'm sure she's like fine not working. But when we saw her in that whatever that these stars watching TV show was last year.
Oh, yeah.
Her and Curtis sometimes and her brother just watching shows and like being real and being goofy, like she's very likable, and I think she was good in that sitcom she was briefly on that our friend Brian wrote on with the Oliver Hudson and Jenna Fisher, who were divorced but still living together.
Oh yeah. Okay.
She was good in that. And so I think she could do drama or she could do comedy. She's really versatile. We didn't really care for her turn in Kitchen Confidential, but that was not her fault.
No.
Laura Layton, my real pick. Lindsay Price, you know, backup, just to not both be the same.
Yeah. Solid.
Let's hear from Greg.
Hi, this is Greg from California. I'm wondering who the creepiest character on 90210 ever was. I have a list of names to consider. Gil Myers, Tara Marks, John Sears, Mel Silver, Jonesy, or Laura Kingman. Please discuss. Thanks. Love everything you do.
So do we have to pick from that list?
No. I think that's just like, okay. That's a starting point. I got a couple. I'll go first because they're both from the same storyline. I'm going to say Lenny and Garrett Slan from stalking / you know, Lenny ended up being the red herring rapist, even though the show was not quite sure what to do about him, where they were like, well, the reason that he didn't come forward, even though he knew who it was that he had already caught a rape charge before when he was in the military. And they were like, you know, they framed it as, well, he did his time and now he's fine. And it's like, as we said at the time, I'm not sure someone who is an admitted and convicted sex offender should be living in a co-ed campus dorm. No offense.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say tie for the two of them, Garrett and Lenny.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna throw out Crazy Laura just right off the top because I don't think she's creepy. I think she's very troubled and just needed some time.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy teachers abounding. So Gil, but also Mr. Suter, I think is way creepier because his like stated reason for not going with one of his students is that he has a girlfriend. Like, hey, Elvis.
Yeah.
She's 16. They're minors.
Yeah. I'm going to throw Corey Randall into the mix for that, too. Oh, he's not, like, a sex pest, but he's weird.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. His estranged wife was also kind of creepy,
She was. Yeah.
But she was, I don't know. Like, a 90210, the line between a creep and creepy is... like, it's very fuzzy sometimes. But yeah, I'm going to pick Mr. Suter.
Mm-hmm. Good call. Let us hear from our first of two Ericas.
Hey, Tara, Sarah, and Dave. So the Again With This podcast is my comfort listen. People have comfort shows like Beverly Hills 90210. And I have comfort podcasts, and yours is one of them. I think I'm on my, like, third time through.
Yeah.
Aww. So my question is, because now I'm picking up lots of different little jokes and things that happen along the way and how witty you guys are. So what I would love to know is, how scripted are your podcasts? Do you have a script? Do you just have an outline? Because the jokes are always right on and hilarious, and for the most part. Okay. Dave is so quick with audio clips. Fair. And I was just curious, how scripted is the Again With This podcast?
Wow, what a qualifier.
Oh, and this is Erica.
It's fairly scripted. I'll take you through my process. When I rip the episodes from our DVDs, I also go to the episode synopsis on IMDb and just make up first like a skeleton outline with like the major plot lines. And sometimes those have to be collapsed once I actually watch the episode because they just don't make sense. This is a lot of times when you're like, and from here, this they fold into the A plot, so we'll come back to them, you know, that kind of thing. And then I watch the episode. I make notes in Notes, the Notes app. It's all lowercase. I try to go as fast as I can. So sometimes if you hear me like mix up who a character is, it's because I've only included them by like their lowercase first and last initials. So there's so many M's, I sometimes get them mixed up. And then, you know, sometimes the jokes are in there. Sometimes they occur to us in the moment. I mean, anytime Sarah interjects, that's Sarah being witty. She does not have access to my script. It's like long and detailed, and she would think I was a psycho if she ever saw it. But that's also where I put
how
in.
How long like, have we been working together?
Okay, fine. But that's also where I put in like the clips. And so it used to be, when we first started, it was a lot looser, but that also, like, then I wouldn't know, like, when to throw to the clips necessarily, so I had to get more detailed with it. And when I then go through it after I've done all the notes and, like, finished the doc, put in, like, all the clip cues and sent that to Sarah, then I go through the rundown again to do the visual aids. And so sometimes I, like, tighten it up and cut stuff if it's, like, not interesting. As much as possible. Sometimes you still have to keep in that connective tissue. But that's my process. Sarah?
My process is to just do what Tara thinks we should do. Honestly, it's a process that has been working for me for almost a quarter of a century, so I just go with it.
But to be clear, the show is not scripted. The show is outlined.
No. Yes.
The dialogue is
the
not
show
scripted.
Is outlined. And yes. Definitely David T. Cole is has been making us look funnier and smarter than we are for a long time.
This is my lightest edit, to be honest with you.
Because you're not paying attention because the show's terrible. not our show, the show.
I don't have the knowledge to edit, you know, with an understanding of the content on this show as much as I do on the other shows that we all do together.
Yeah.
You know, like Extra Hot Great, TV mm-hmm. shows we're all watching. I know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Quiz show, that's got a certain cadence and a certain mm-hmm. rhythm to the edits, you know, so it's...
And it has to be tighter.
And it has to be tighter. And this one is definitely more conversational in nature.
Yes.
And it is, as we say, not scripted, but it is structured. So...
Yeah.
It is, in fact, actually my easiest edit, and I thank you for that, because if I actually had to edit it for content, I would have to start watching this stuff, and I don't want to do that.
Yes.
And you shouldn't. That's what we are for. So I watch the episodes. I make my own notes on lined paper with a pen. Ask your grandparents. Tara thinks I'm a psycho for that. She's right. I have a million pens. It's a whole thing. If you want to leave me messages about your preferred rollerball, I'm here for it. Mm-hmm. Rollerball.
Yeah.
And then I just write down clips that I think are noticeable or that I want to talk about or line deliveries that are good. 99 times out of 100, Tara already marked them. We trade off doing the visual aids. Tara is a GIF machine artist. I'm a little more about the Frisco Jones hair of it all. but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we all have a lot of podcasts and we've been doing this for a while and there is a process that sort of streamlines it so that we can work smarter, not harder. But my job basically is to get in line behind my pod spouses and do what they say when they say to do it. And I'm okay at doing that.
Yeah, agreed. When you look at the visual aids, if it's a GIF, it was by me. If it was a crazy still shot with a giant arrow on it, it was Sarah. Usually, sometimes I do an arrow shot too. But so that's how it goes. And a lot of this is just because I don't want to wait to get stuff done. My fetish in life is like getting ahead of work. So I just try to do the most that I can, the fastest I can. And I also never want anyone to be waiting for me. So that's why I've taken the lead on this, and it, you know, 5,000 episodes in, it works. And this is the process that works. And it's still
I don't necessarily want anyone to be waiting on me, but I've learned to live with it.
Yes. That was not a drag. I've changed my workflow to just be like, you know, I have expectations of like what is happening when. So, you know, I've gotten to the point where now I can like arrange all of my windows in just my laptop screen so I can do the visual aids on the couch while watching something else. And so that has been a great, important evolution for me because, you know, it's better to multitask that way. Let's hear from Chelsea.
Hi, Tara Aradio and Sarah D. Bunting. This is Chelsea from Detroit, and I'm a longtime listener, and I love your book, and I just have a question for the both of you. Which is more believable, Andrea being the same age as her classmates from West Bev, or Joan giving birth to a child in season 6 when she's literally the age of a grandmother? I would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, ladies. Bye.
Sarah.
Andrea.
Agree. We never really understand how old Joan is supposed to be. It's possible that they tried to cheat it because we don't really know how old Nat is either, other than that he was like alive and making movies in the 70s and so was Joan.
Well, but that's the problem. Like, they actually give us the actual Corman film that Joey Tada was in. And it's like, okay, well, now you've fucking dropped a pin on that map. So we can kind of figure out, like, she can't have been any older than this and she can't have been any younger than that, probably. So,
yeah.
I mean, but then I think we talked about this in the episode, but I think we sort of worked out, like, according to the math, she could still be like perimenopausal and it's still possible. But then the actor did not line up visually with that reality.
Yes, that's the thing. Exactly. She was over 50 in the late 90s when people who were women and who were over 50 looked like they were old. You know, it's not like when you see Marissa Tomei today, age 57, you're like, oh, she could still be fertile. Like, she could. I don't know. It's unlikely. Yeah. But like, you know, just to name one example, like women who are famous and over, you know, getting on in years look a lot younger now than they did in the 20 years ago.
Well, and a lot of it is the styling. Like, you look at the Golden Girls, you look at their ages when they and, you know, my grandmother, pictures of her when she was 50.
Yeah.
She looked 70 and had a girdle and white hair, like the whole thing. So it's just a generational thing, but Joan had a Nana vibe and that was not believable.
Yes. And I think, you know, Gabrielle Carteris, like, for all the shit we give her, like, she had some older lady mannerisms, but like in the face, she looked young to me most of the time. Honestly, they were able to cheat it a lot longer as long as the character still had glasses.
Yeah.
Because not to be rude, like, you know, your eyes give you away a lot of the time when you're an older person, and so as long as Andrea still had glasses, she looked young to me, and she read young, you know, the moment of like clapping on the bench at the
that's what I always think of with that blossom that hat.
The hat, Anna, exactly. But like, once you cross over into season 4 and she's like, her hair is not curly anymore, she's not wearing glasses, like, she instantly looks so much older and is also pregnant, so like,
yeah.
You know, that doesn't help. Baby is stealing her beauty, as they say.
Yeah. Oh.
So, no offense. We love her. But yeah, Joan, for sure. Let us hear from Linda.
Hello, again with this. My name is Linda, and I have a question.
A word?
That I'd like you to ponder and help me with. Here's what I want to know. How come take Jake, for example. Jake worked his way through practically every woman in the credits cast, Amanda, Allison, Joe, Jane, Sydney, basically everybody, even old Drolly Cakes, Sandy, other than Rhonda. Jake like had everyone at some point, right? I mean, I guess not Kimberly, but Kimberly and Michael are kind of their own thing. But Why then did Billy get that story with Allison and Amanda? And then they just like assumed we got to bring in new women, right? They brought in Brooke. They brought in replacements person, Brooke Langton. They brought in other people because apparently they did not want to do what would seem to me to be obvious, which is continue that pattern of everybody should have sex with everybody else. And Billy, even after he was cut, you know, loose of the original story that he was involved in, they just started bringing in new women. And I have been trying to figure out why did that happen? And it's like, I suspect that the reason is they just felt like that character would drag down anybody that got involved with him. I mean, and the funny thing is there was that one moment where Jane was like, oh, Billy, maybe we can comfort each other. But it was clear that, first of all, she was out of herself at that time. But also, like, that moment of, like, those two characters, it's like, oh, no, this could definitely not be a thing. Like, there is nothing here at all between these two characters, Jane and Billy. So I suspect it's partly that. Like, he doesn't, as opposed to Jake, who, like, brings Jake-ness to everybody that he sleeps with, like, with Billy, it's like, well, then he brings Billiness. So they're, like, bringing in women who are more interesting than him. Do you see what I'm saying? Brooke and, well, it doesn't necessarily apply beyond Brooke. But the point being, why did they skip all these very easy opportunities to hook Billy up with other people when they were so, like, generous with letting Jake have sex with everyone except Rhonda? And Michael doesn't exactly count because Michael was so wrapped up in that Jane and Sydney thing and then got involved with Kimberly. Like, they played a longer game with Michael. But Billy is, again, somebody who, after Allison and Amanda never really settled into a long thing that was successful. So, like, why not try him out with one of the people that you already have? I mean, I guess it would not have been plausible to try to suggest that Sydney was interested in Billy. Although, I guess if she was interested in that Chad Lowe guy, I guess, character, then, well, I guess. All right. I'm done ranting. Tell me why Billy never got to sleep with the other women on the show. My name is Linda, and I'll take my answer off the air.
I love how this is like, I am a person named Linda. We know Linda. You all know Linda. This is Linda. Mm-hmm. I'll just go ahead and dox her because we're going to link to her book in the show notes. But this is Linda Holmes of NPR, our former colleague at Television of the Pity. She has a new book out called Flying Solo at Penguin Random House. Congratulations to her. Thrilled to read it. We will link it in the show notes. Everybody go buy Linda's book. I have a theory about this, but I'm curious to know what yours is. So please, you go first.
Everyone who has been screaming hashtag it's Billy at your podcast console for the last few minutes. Yeah, it's Billy. Like, I mean, I'm sort of facetiously going to suggest that various actors had it written into their contracts for the season that they wouldn't have to make out with that guy. And a recent set of visual aids. Like, he's just so... It's Billy. But I mean, I think Linda was sort of groping towards something, which is that, like, Billy being Billy and Andrew Hsu's inability to match scene and correct face makes it difficult to pair him off with core cast, because it's just like, well, we've established that these people can't have any chemistry because it's Billy. So I can see how they would keep bringing people in, maybe thinking it was endgame to get him back together with Allison, but because, spoiler, we know that doesn't occur. I think it's because it's Billy. And there's only so much you can do with that. So you have to get cheaper people who are less established to pair him off with, because the credits cast is going to be like, I'm sorry, we talked about this in arbitration. No. What's your theory?
I definitely think that's possible, but I think it's more to do with how the show writers perceived Billy as a character versus Jake. Like, Jake is kind of established right from the start as, like, not to be rude, but, like, kind of a slut. He's certainly more of, like, a coarse character. Everything we know about his background is that, like, it's kind of rough. You know, he's fucking fixing his motorcycle beside the pool all the time. Like, whereas Billy is positioned as like, he's the nice guy. He's the one who comes from a good family. Not that we've
heard. He's the writer, LOL.
Right. He's like the sweetie. And so, you know, once they started with him as like, he and Allison, you know, as you say, we know that doesn't end up happening, but like, he and Allison are supposed to be the, you know, one true pairing for each other until that falls apart. I think it would, as Linda says, it would be weird if he was like sleeping around the complex, given how the show wants to position him versus how Andrew Shue plays him, which is a totally other thing, as we have said many a time. Like, the only other person on the show other than Michael, as Linda says, who like really only, as I was thinking about it while I was listening to her call this time, he's really only, we've seen him sleep with like his four wives plus Amanda, and that's kind of it, which is weird considering like what a scumbag he's supposed to be. Am I forgetting anyone? Yeah. I'm not, right?
I don't think so.
Versus, so the only other person, I agree with Linda, he's on his own thing.
Yeah, that's a different, an almost like Joseph Campbell, like archetype thing that you're dealing with of soaps. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's, I mean, he hasn't even lived in the complex other than when he was crashing at Matt's earlier this in season five. He hasn't lived there like since season two.
Yeah.
So he definitely is like on a separate thing. But the only other person who has slept with as many other neighbors as Jake is Amanda, and she's also positioned as like the bad girl. I mean, explicitly on the posters, Mondays are a bitch, like with her face. And she has slept with Billy, Jake, Michael, and then Peter, I guess, who becomes, you know, he ends up moving into there.
Both Parisis, like they didn't live there, but you know.
Right. So I think it's because they're, you know, there are good characters in quotes and there are bad characters on the show. And so I think the reason that Billy ended up getting like the new blood, certainly I think part of it is like other female neighbors see him as a brother figure. Yeah. So we wouldn't necessarily buy their matchups because that's how the show positions him as like the good guy. Mm. Whereas Jake is like, he's a loose cannon. He might do anything. You know, like,
well, and also Jake is like much hotter. Like,
he is. Yes. No,
leaving aside the hashtag it's Billiness of it all.
Sure.
Jake is like, you know, this person has been shirtless in the credits since like Jump Street. So,
right. Yes.
I don't know. Like, that's the man candy and he has to be man candying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Tara's closer to it.
Well, I mean, both things could be true, but thank you for that question, Linda. That was a real thinker.
So, yeah, that I was like, duh, it's Billy. Well,
Yeah.
But they haven't fired him, so Yeah. That was a thinker.
All right, let's hear from Jackie.
Hi, Tara and Sarah. This is Jackie. I love your show. There's something that I wanted to run by you to see if you've ever heard about. I have some relatives that have lived in Beverly Hills for decades, and they told me back when the series started that the city of Beverly Hills wanted at some point in each episode Beverly Hills High School to be mentioned by one of the cast members, so there was no confusion that the series may be taking place actually at Beverly Hills High School, but they thought it was kind of dumb because the school West Beverly didn't make sense, as Beverly Hills High School is apparently as west as you could possibly be in the city of Beverly Hills, so the idea of there being a school called West Beverly didn't make sense. And if you look back at all the episodes in the first season, they do mention Beverly Hills High School in some way, as there being like a game against them or a kid from there that they knew or someone that attended the school. And they stopped mentioning it, I think, after the first season. But I just wondered if you'd ever heard that story or anything like that. But I don't know. Thank you. Your show is wonderful. I love it. Thank you.
I looked this up. I will link to the show's Wikipedia entry in the show notes because this is all I found. I didn't find any references to like that it was mandated that the show draw a sharp distinction between the fictional West Beverly and the real Beverly High. But on the Wikipedia page, here's what it says. Quote, initially, the producers of the 1990s television drama Beverly Hills 90210 wanted the show to be set at Beverly Hills High School and the show to be filmed on Beverly's campus. The Beverly Hills School Board declined both requests, so the TV producers created the fictional West Beverly Hills High School, or West Beverly, and the show was filmed at Torrance High School in Torrance, California. West Beverly is a clear reference to Beverly, as Jackie said, because Beverly's campus is located on the western border of Beverly Hills. However, the real Beverly High is mentioned throughout the first three seasons of the show. That's crazy that they thought they would be able to shoot there. It's like one of the fanciest schools in the whole district. But it does make sense that that was their initial hope because, you know, it is a very, you know, high achieving public school in line, like basically what we see of the show, what we see about the school on the show, where it's like, sometimes you think it's weird that these very wealthy students would be going to a public high school, but apparently the real Beverly Hills.
Yeah. It's kind of Stuyvesant-y.
Exactly. Yes.
Tri-state area people.
Yeah.
I mean, I can also see that, like, never mind that the school obviously declined. I wonder if they would decline again.
Right.
Today, but I wonder if it's not also like that the crew would have gotten there, the production would have gotten there and been like, this isn't really camera friendly versus Torrance High School. Like, if you didn't watch Bev Niner, you recognize it from Buffy. Like, it's set up really well for this stuff. And shout out to Can't Say Go Pants Extra. Who I think of every time I picture that courtyard, I think of his Z Cavaricci's running past the camera.
Yeah, I guess like they probably, even at Torrance High, they probably shot all of their exteriors like in the summertime for the season as much as they possibly could, which is why, like, especially in season three, we start seeing like, we've never seen this part of the courtyard before, and it like seems obvious it's a set somewhere because it's January and they didn't have these episodes written in time and they can't shoot there because school's in.
Yeah, probably.
Let's hear from Danielle.
Oh my God, I love you guys. You get me through my days. I've listened multiple times to all the eps. Hey, I think one of the writers is the chick that was helping Erica at the pool, and also the one that was giving Kelly the biz, the girlfriend of the one girl that was burned. Anyways, I think that's a writer on the show. Is that true? Or related to somebody on the show? Anyway, I wanted to let you know you guys are rad. Thanks for everything you do. You make the day so much better. Talk to you later. Bye. Danielle.
Danielle.
Thank you, Danielle.
I looked it up. At first, I was confused about the second person you mentioned. I thought you meant Dana, who was Allison, the crispy lesbian's ex-girlfriend. That's not who I think you're referring to, because when I looked up the cast lists for both Thicker Than Water, the one where Erica gets her period, obviously given the title, and Girls on the Side, where Kelly runs into people who knew Allison and they give her the gears. One of the people who is credited in both of those, I believe, as woman is Karen Rosen of Charles and Karen Rosen fame. So we'll link those in the show notes. So good eye, Danielle. You are correct.
Yeah, nice.
Let's hear from our second Erica.
Hello, Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting. this is Erica. Hello. I'm calling from Wheaton, Maryland. And I'm just curious as to, like, who your favorite one-shot character is, or your, you know, maybe less significant characters, such as the ones who didn't get the attention that they deserved, such as Deshaun or Cameron. And speaking of people who should team up, Deshaun and Cameron. Love those guys. And what kind of adventures would you like to see them going off on their inevitable spinoffs? For much more interesting characters, like that the writers really enjoyed writing, but didn't seem to get their asses behind writing their main characters, which is very sad. Also, if you'd ever consider doing a live show anywhere ever in the world, I'm just saying, we don't love that. So I didn't write down what I was going to say ahead of time, but you enjoy my rambling. Anyway, thanks for the great show, and I'll look forward to listening to the call-in show that inevitably does not feature this rambling nonsense. Okay, bye.
It's like you don't know us at all, Erica.
The answer is the earthquake machine, pinball machine. And further, a question for you guys, who's your favorite Erica?
Well, it's not the Erica who got her period in Thicker Than Water, that's
no,
for sure.
No, it isn't, but that was not her fault. I mean, I love Deshaun. This is well
known. Of course. Yes.
I've often said that I would watch the hell out of a spinoff featuring him and his twin solving crimes, because she sounded like a Brenda and a half, and I'm here for it. However, I am going to go with James Townsend of the one-on-one episode from the first season. He burned Brandon to the ground. Granted, the ground was close to Brandon. Short. I haven't gotten to make that joke in a while. But characters didn't really get to do that all that often after a while, but they were not afraid. And Tico Wells absolutely rules in that scene. And I think we have to get some Tico Wells material going on again with this, because I mean, every now and then, like while we were writing the book, even if it had nothing to do with the chapter we were on, I would just rewatch that scene because it's so good. And then Brandon is just set, like smoke is like rising from him. It's great. Mm-hmm. Who's yours?
Well, they sort of go into different buckets, because part of the problem is like a couple of the true one-off characters, it's more a situation where it's like, oh, I can't believe you burned that actor on this character who only existed to like come in, teach these boneheads a lesson about whatever and then disappear. Yeah. So the one who I think is most in that category is Kristen Dottillo, who played Melissa, the teen mom, in season one. Mm-hmm. And they kind of burned her because she was already a senior at that point. So there was no real reason for her to come back. And again, as I said, the only reason that she was on the show at all was so that Brandon could learn about teen motherhood and whatever. Another one who's like the actor was wasted on a character who was kind of a shithead is Liz Vassie as Marcy St. Clair in season two.
Oh, that was a shame.
It really was, because she's delightful. I mean, we all know we have continued to watch her on our televisions as a wonderful lab rat on CSI for a couple of seasons. But my actual answer of someone who I would have seen more of and followed to another show if that had been possible, like to a spinoff, one is Michael Stoyanov, who played Jimmy Gold in Kelly's Run when she's working at an AIDS hospice. And again, he's there to teach her about AIDS. And
oh, yes. The death
knife
salad.
Safety.
Jesus.
And this is partly, I admit, and we said at the time, I'm sure, he is a friend of a friend and like someone who we know. So this is like a little bit of a nepotism pick. But I do think he brought, this is another example of him bringing more to that character than was actually on the page.
Yeah, and then he's in all this gray makeup, and you're like, guys, what are we doing here? Like, this is not okay.
No, it's not. And then another one to bring back up your point about, like, when you identify more with Patty Chase, Jenny O'Hara as Mrs. Scanlon. What a weird woman.
Like, oh, my God.
She deserved more. Like, I just have so many questions about her, her life, her million
that
children.
That whole fucking Partridge Family bus full of trauma and dysfunction. Jesus.
Yeah. So those are my several picks. But yes, I mean, you already mentioned Deshaun, who is the true answer. But yeah, thank
you. He became Black Lightning. It all worked out for him. So you got to give other people some sunshine.
It's true. We got a couple of texts as well. Here, the first one of these is from Michael, who I will read. Longtime listener and first-time texter. Sorry, can't leave a voicemail, as the thought of hearing my own voice on a podcast makes me ill. Come on now. My question is solely about a glaring omission in the, again with this canon, Starship Troopers. This movie has so much Starverse crossover that he probably has legal standing to sue for lack of casting credit for the film. It has Casper Van Dien, Griffin Stone, mm-hmm. Lucinda Nicholson, played by Dina Meyer, Denise Richards, who was the jailbait on Melrose in the Lonnie Anderson plotline, Patrick Muldoon, and if that's not enough, Mrs. Effin Teasley is in it. It's also streaming on Netflix currently. Please write this wrong. Well, spoiler, I have heard your cry, Michael. This was already on my mind as a future pick because we recently talked about it on the Patreon for our sister podcast, Extra Hot Great. We mentioned the Futurama takeoff of Starship Troopers with the brain balls, the war mm-hmm. against the brain balls. And I thought, oh, yeah, that has tons of 90210 people in it. We should do it. And so we're gonna. So look forward to Again with this 109 dropping August 26th. We're gonna be talking about Starship motherfucking Troopers. And I think we will probably hear from Dave on that too, because it is a movie he has seen many times. It is one of our best cinema experiences, probably in all the time we've known each other.
Look Cineranima Dome. Yeah, I'm from Buenos Aires and I say we kill them all.
That's right. I assume you've seen this movie before, Sarah.
I have never seen it.
What? Oh, this is going to be great.
I am a Mennonite. It is
practically an episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
It truly is, like he said.
I mean, I don't know how I managed to let it. I don't know how it managed to avoid me.
Yeah.
I'm not against it. Mm-hmm. Denise Richards was also at Mel and Jackie's wedding.
That's right. Yes. She was on both shows. Look forward to that. And thank you, Michael, for the nudge, because I probably would have forgot. Mm. We also have this, we did not get a name, clip 10.
Hi, Keybone and Muncie. I was wondering, as Melrose Place's Death March closes in on its inevitable end, have you selected your next show for this? Thank you. Bye.
Thank you to No Name. We also got a text about this from Ed, who suggested the CW 90210 or Dawson's Creek. The short answer is we have not chosen our next show yet, but I have many eBay searches saved for exactly this reason, so that I'm prepared for any potential future. And just recently, late in June, a DVD of the CW Melrose Place, the one season wonder, came up, and I'd never seen it for sale before, and I pounced on it. So we have options. I have all the DVDs now for the CW 90210. I have the DVD of the new Melrose. We have, through Methods, all of Models, Inc. We have the Gross Point single season DVDs. So the Starverse, I mean, it's rich. It's a universe that keeps unfolding, much like our actual universe. It also encompasses, you know, Sex and the City, which we could do in the future. Who's to say? He's, you know, Emily in Paris. Why not? He's got a new show coming like this very Friday on Netflix called Uncoupled. So we have options, but the short answer is we haven't picked yet, but don't worry, we will pick. And Ed suggested Dawson's Creek, as I said. Here's what I can tell you, it's not going to be that.
I think I'm done with that.
Anyway, stay tuned.
But wait, why?
What?
Why not Dawson's Creek?
I don't want to watch that shit again.
I just don't have anything else to say.
No, it's not like watch the Pacey scenes and you're good. Mm-hmm. I feel
like good luck to everyone, but I wouldn't even be able to get that mad about it.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. You'll hear our process as we're getting up to that point.
So. Yeah, but you know, we still have two and like a quarter seasons of Melrose Place, so this was not a question that's really on our minds actively, except for me and my eBay searches. So I was really excited when I got that Melrose. The CW Melrose, because that is some rare shit. So thank you to that seller. And thank you for that question. All right, let's switch over to comments, starting with Eve.
Hi, guys. Your friend Eve here, calling in to talk about the gay kiss that went down on Canadian TV in mid-May 1994, and I think 4 or 5 days later in the U.S. I'm very, very old. I remember getting together with my friends to watch it. I guess maybe we didn't have access to Canada, so we didn't know what was going to happen. And when this is Billy and Allison getting married, by the way. I hate that relationship. when the moment where we thought that Matt and his buddy were going to kiss outside Billy's apartment, the show cut away, and I remember everyone in the room just like, ugh, like the same sort of scream that you hear like when someone like fumbles the ball, like instead of making a touchdown or something like that. It's a moment that I still remember, like in my sort of big moments of television watching. God, is that a list I have in my head? It was like a big deal. And so I went and I pulled up some of the coverage, because I wanted to call and talk to you about it. And I want to read you, this part of this AP story. I'll send you the link. So this guy who, you know, this show is on Fox's, of course, you know. So Fox's Sandy Grew Show, G-R-U-S-H-O-W, I don't know how you pronounce it. I'm going to look it up after this and see if this guy got me too'd. He says he got a bunch of questions about this at some sort of press event. I don't know. Oh, Television Critics Association meeting. So he says, the bottom line is we're a business. We would have lost up to $1 million by airing that kiss. And, like, I don't know if that was necessarily true, but according to this AP article, Fox arrived at that $1 million figure after speaking with advertisers. So, like, what are you going to go to them and say, like, hey, are you going to pull your advertising? We have this gay kiss. I don't know. The whole thing still doesn't fit right with me so many years later and still makes me angry. I know it makes you angry, too, but I wanted to bring it up as something that definitely shaped me as a consumer of culture. Thank you for your podcast, and thank you for taking my call. Take care. Bye-bye.
I was just imagining like a lab where they have all these guys and they're about to kiss and there's like, you know, the Law and Order mirror and everybody's looking in. They got the little buzzers, you know, they go left and right whether they like it or not. And then like there's a big display with a dollar sign and it goes red or green depending on who likes it and everything. And it goes on for like a week.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Eve did send those links and we'll put them in the show notes. I had forgotten the detail that the episode aired in Canada before it aired in the U.S., which would happen sometimes in the in the 90s, I think at a certain point.
That used to happen when we were co-recapping ER, I think, that there were a couple of...
Oh, yeah, it would air on Wednesdays, yes.
Yeah. So,
I think the general, you know, agreement, or, you know, licensing agreement, whatever it was, is you can, back then, you can air it the same week. So sometimes, depending on what the Canadian, you know, timetable looked like, they would put it on a different day of the week, and it would be like, and it was nice once in a while to have the tables turn, because usually it was the other way in like a month or something like that. It's like, you know, everybody's already learned about, you know, who murdered who, like JR shot, what?
Yeah, ever. I mean, my mother was just here the week before last, and I, you know, was exposing her to some shows that I felt she needed to see. Borgen was one. We made both my parents watch Taskmaster. And then I also showed her the first 5 episodes of Julia, the HBO Max show, which is like the mommest mom show that ever mommed. And then when I went to look up, like, so that I could text her and say, if you want to keep watching it, it's here in Canada. It's nowhere in Canada. Like, there still is stuff that if you don't know how to, you know, fly to America, if you live there, like, that you just, it's months later that you can't see it. Like, the one that I always remember is Project Runway season 2. Is that the one with Daniel? That was the second season, right? Where we got those episodes on our version of Lifetime, which I don't even remember what it was called anymore. It might just have been called W, but they were like a couple of weeks later. And at the time, I was, you know, like pop culture was my job. I subscribed to, you know, Entertainment Weekly and People and like all this stuff. And I was on the internet all the time and avoiding any spoilers about who won that season for like 2 weeks was my greatest achievement. It was like, I was like Catherine Zeta-Jones through the lasers in Entrapment, like avoiding those spoilers.
Love it.
I would never be able to do that now for sure. But anyway, Eve made it seem like the Canadian version aired with the kiss and then it got cut, which is not the case. The Canadian, it was the same version of the episode.
Yeah.
Or that's possibly how I interpreted what she said. I don't think she said it in those words, but like, yes, the episode aired in Canada several days before it aired in the US, but like it was the same footage. It's not like they cut it after Canada aired it.
I don't remember my response contemporaneously, but I mm-hmm. think we were all pretty inured to the idea that Fox was like at base, like at root, a conservative network. So yeah. when a character got pregnant, or if a character's sexuality was anything other than cis het flavor, mm-hmm. that this is what was going to happen. In retrospect, that cutaway is extremely obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like something that was done quite close to air and is yep. like not kerned correctly, basically. But
yeah.
And also don't go to Billy for the two shot. It's Billy.
Yes.
But I mean, this is how, like 30 years ago, this is just how it was. Mm-hmm. And I don't recall being particularly like, I think it was like, it was scandalous that they weren't showing this. Like, it was mm-hmm. absurd that they weren't showing this, but it yeah. was also like, expected. Of course they weren't showing yeah. this.
I agree with you about the editing. It is very pointed. Like, it's a real mm-hmm. fuck you to the network, where it's like, it's extremely obvious that like yeah. something was shot that is not there.
You might even say it's criminal. And for those of you who don't know, Eve is my esteemed co-editor-in-chief on True Crime Newsletter, Best Evidence. Mm-hmm. That'll be linked in the show notes. But Eve, great reporting as always. And yeah, I agree. Like, and the longer Matt is on the show, like just literally holding phones and doors for people, and that's his only job, is to like be in scrubs and pick up a check. You're just like, mm-hmm. just let him French someone so that he has something to do. Something, yeah. someone. Sigh. Poor
yes.
guy.
Before we move on, as we record this, I am possibly supposed to be interviewing Darren Star next week about his new show. So I will. This could, of course, still fall apart. It often does. But I will ask him about this, because, you know, his career, as I was saying to Sarah in Slack yesterday, has gone through a lot of changes. I mean, and the whole industry has changed in the time that he's been working in it. So I'm sure he has things to say, mm-hmm. particularly since his new show is specifically and explicitly about a gay marriage that falls apart. And I assume, you know, guys get down on screen in it. So, yeah, I look forward to talking to him about those kinds of things. Let's hear from Nancy.
Hi, my name is Nancy. Sorry, I'm a little stuffy today and I just had some coffee, so I won't talk too fast. I've been a huge fan of the podcast since it started. Your podcast outlasted my marriage. Anyway, I've been working from home since the pandemic, and usually I have the Pluto channel, the 90210 channel on Pluto streaming in the background at least at one point during the day. So I've seen a lot of these episodes over and over the last few years. And I have a few nitpicks. Like, I think there used to be a nitpick section on the 90210 forums in Television Without Pity. Because I think I may have been the one to point out, like, hey, when did Dylan have time to be the one to do all this crazy stuff and impregnate this girl in France before the show even started? Because at that point, he should have been 16. That may have been me. But I had a few thoughts while watching the show, and here are a few of them. And the big one is, like, where are the parents when these kids are signing contracts? Like, when Steve and David went to meet Curtis Bray at Icon Records, like, why didn't David also have his parents there? Like, at least Mel, or a lawyer. Like, was Steve even old enough, like, in the show, to be old enough to sign a contract for David if he did represent him? Or what about when Brandon got the job and Keep It Together? Like, was he old enough to sign that paperwork since he was a minor? Like, Jim and Cindy wouldn't want to check out what their son was signing, you know, for a major Hollywood television show. And even in Paris, when Donna wanted Brenda to translate the modeling contract she was given, again, could a minor who lives outside the country sign legally binding paperwork? It's like they weren't adults yet. Where are their parents? Their parents could afford lawyers. And then another thing, I don't know. I mean, this is Andrea. She freaks out about bringing Hannah to, like, all the Catholic observations with Jesse for, you know, Day of the Dead. Or, sorry, that's a movie, right? Night of the Living Dead, no. You know, the cemetery, event in the cemetery for Halloween and for the Christmas stuff. And
she's telling Jesse that Hannah is Jewish, but is Andrea Jewish? Like, here's what I was thinking, because in the episode where Lainey Kazan plays her grandmother, Andrea asks her, you know, if she didn't like her mother because her father married outside the faith. Now, correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not Jewish, but doesn't the Jewish religion pass down through the mother side? So that would make Andrea then not Jewish, right? I mean, again, I was raised Catholic, you know, since I left it, but that's what I thought. So if Andrea's not Jewish, then Hannah isn't Jewish, you know. And in the beginning, it made Andrea's parents sound like they were atheists anyway, like they didn't celebrate Christmas, and that's why she ends up at the Walshes and all that. Whatever. Those are just a couple things I was thinking of. Again, I've been working from home by myself for a while, and I drink a lot of coffee. So I'm sorry for rambling.
Thank you, Nancy. Jewish thing, I'm not going to police anyone's faith identification. It's obviously more important to Andrea as the series goes on that she, you know, identifies herself as Jewish, and, you know, it ebbs and flows depending on the requirements of the plot. Yes, you are right. Like, technically, it does go through the mother's line, but, you know.
But technically, at this point in the series, Andrea has a sister who is never heard of again, and her parents at her wedding, like, one of them gets half a line that's, like, caught by Rex with the boom mic. Like, it's, I mean, I would say that there are certain things that happen in season one that, even though we like to joke about it and, like, you know, where is that French kid? Like, you know, mon Dieu, he's like in his 30s now. That especially with the Andrea plots, like, it's a different Grandma Rose after that.
Yeah.
We never hear about this conflict again. They clearly could not afford or did not want to spend money on Andrea specific plots unless they absolutely had to. I think a lot of the parents, we don't see them because the production did not want to pay these actors. But particularly with this, like, that is, like, on the matrilineage point, again, I was raised a Baptist, but, you know, my nibblings are Jewish because their mother is. But I also think that the writers forgot a lot of things, and these people did junior year how many times? Like, some season one stuff is just like, well,
yeah.
Like, we appreciate Lainey Kazan's effort, but probably everything in that episode is not canon.
That was season two, but your point is taken.
Oh, yeah. But yeah.
But yes. You're not wrong about any of this. Andrea was, like, one of the least served characters.
Yeah.
But Sarah's also right that, like, the amount that they cared to deal with the parents is also ebbs and flows. Like, we don't see David's mother until, like, the Val era.
Yeah, until she's, you know, unhomed and we have to have an Emmy bait episode for Brian Austin Green, LOL.
Let's hear from Adam.
Hello, Sarah D. Bunting, Tara Aranio, and David Cole. Thank you for providing all your listeners so much amazing entertainment and keeping us sane since the pandemic started with your back catalog. I've grown up watching these shows as they aired and then constantly on VHS tapes, Kids Ask Your Parents, and later the horrible No Music Right DVDs. I feel kindred with you all, as I'm originally from Burlington, Ontario, near where Tara grew up in St. Catharines, but then spent the early 90s as a young teen in Westchester, New York, which aligns me a bit with Sarah with her New Jersey past. And to top it off, my parents now live in Austin, Texas, and I go there frequently, always hoping I'll spot Tara and Dave at the Whole Foods or at a Chewy's. Anyway, my message is to say that to any of your newer listeners, do yourself a favor and re-listen to the podcast recapping Season 3, Episode 17 of Beverly Hills, The Game is Chicken. While it's one of the worst episodes of the legitimate seasons, the podcast is my favorite due to Dave Cole's hilarious work as producer. It is guaranteed to make you laugh. So thank you again, Sarah, Tara, and Dave, for all your hard work over the years. As I listen to other TV show recappers, I realize the huge amount of work that goes into making a quality podcast. And again, with this, so clearly is one. Enjoy your summer break, guys.
That's so nice.
Thanks, Adam.
You would never see us at Whole Foods, probably, unless I'm, like, checking in to get Dave popcorn. I
was H-E-B.
Or Burlington.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I grew up in Thorold. I can say that.
I was just in the 914 a few days ago, though. So you see a gray Mini Cooper.
There was a time when I was maybe going to join the Burlington Teen Tour band after we moved to St. Catharines, because that was like the best band in the region, but I never ended up doing it. I don't remember why.
But how was the Coat Factory?
Didn't make the cut.
We should go to Chewy's, man. Scoop of chips.
Chewy's
right
changed their menu. They went to, Chewy's went, I mean, I don't know why we're talking about this now. Chewy's went like,
why not?
Torchy's franchise mode recently, where they've expanded and now it's all like, they've cut a whole bunch of stuff from the menu because it's all just like what they can source everywhere that it expanded to. So a lot of fan faves are gone. So
it's a shame.
Nobody likes Chewy's anymore.
Well, Adam, thank you for setting us up, you non crud.
this caller didn't leave their name, but let's hear clip 14.
Joey Panther. 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 Joey Panther.
I forgot there was one more.
Oh, shit.
I forgot to say this with regard to Nancy's call. When you get a call in Google Voice tries to transcribe it, and it's
good.
Its attempt, its best guess for when she said 90210 was Night of Human O, which is pretty close.
That's awesome.
This one, they thought he was saying Johnny Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what that was. I like that the cadence sped up, so maybe this person is trying to let us know this is what it sounds like when Joey Tata has sex. But thank you. That was very weird, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And that's still like, I feel like we're still totally like in the wilderness with the pronunciation.
They've said it on OMG. It's Joey Tata. This caller got it right. Joey Tata. Yes.
Tata or Tata?
Somewhere between those. It's just not Tata.
I want it to be Tata.
It's not.
See you later. It's a Tater.
It's not. Okay. It's like,
that's the one thing. It's definitely not.
Right. I think it's Joey. I think it's like what the computer voice said.
Tata.
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 Yes. Something.
Oh my God. All right. Look. The hotline is still open.
Yes.
So vote.
The hotline will remain open. All right, let's hear from Laura.
Hello, friends. This is your old friend Laura from the Texas Hill Country. Longtime caller, first time listener. Anyway, I wanted to let you know that I did not heed your advice, and I regret it to my core. I decided that I would try just to listen to the Beverly Hills 90210 OMG.
Oh, Laura.
No. Laura.
I guess you could call it a podcast.
It's been here for years.
I have other words for it.
I got a bunch.
But, oh, my God. Y'all are doing the Lord's work. And for that, I thank you. And I will probably up my Patreon support because, Jesus, that's bad. Are we doing an over-under on how long that thing's going to last? All right. Take care. You make my Mondays and Thursdays and sometimes Fridays just the very best. Be good. Bye.
Selective Patreon listener there, sometimes Fridays. Sure. I think they probably can keep this going forever, given how much work they put into it, which is none. Like, this is their sideline. They're still making money off it, so
I thought they would have quit by now, so I had the under, and I lost in a bunch of ways. Also, y'all, we're not joking.
No.
Don't fucking listen to it.
It's very serious. We're very serious when we say it. I mean, it sounds like we're joking, has the cadence of a joke, but we really mean it. Do not listen to this show. If for no other reason than to like give them one more listener. Like, don't give them the impression they're a success. They're not.
Yeah. And if you don't listen to it, maybe they'll stop doing it.
Yeah. Are we going to talk you out of upping your Patreon gift? Of course not. If you feel that it deserves more, I'm not going to argue. Let's hear from Reva.
Hey, guys. It's Reva from Irvine, California. And I was just thinking about this, and I needed to vent, I guess, more so about Aaron Spelling than St. Donna Martin. But we all know since Aaron couldn't control Tori's virginity, he had to have a death grip on Donna's. And because of that death grip, he was okay with the storylines of her getting almost raped, being stalked twice, being physically abused, verbally abused, cheated on multiple times, kidnapped on a plane ride to Catalina with Griffin Stone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And David Silver can just be his own category of what the fuck. But I just think that even though, you know, he tried really hard to make it seem like she was perfect, he also gave her, like, just some really fucked up storylines just so that she didn't have to bone anybody. So, you know, that's my gripe. I've always hated the Donna Martin character for that reason. Like, she can do no wrong. She's perfect. Everybody loves her. But, you know, that was obviously fabricated. And also, really, Tori Spelling needs therapy if she's still in love with Brian Austin Green. Love you guys. Love the podcast. Bye.
Oh, Reva, you make such a good point. While you were talking, what I kept thinking of was how much I hate it when some conservative politician is like, as the father of daughters, like that means that that qualifies him to be a human being on behalf of mammarian Americans. Like that shit drives me nuts. But when you look at the trauma that this character was subjected to, not just Brian Austin Green over a decade,
yeah,
the corrosive effects, I think there's a victim's fund for that. Like everything that you listed, just so that she wouldn't get it in, like, how, you know, father of daughters is that? That he's just, like, you know, comfortable with her being abducted, like, the victim of sexual misconduct and people putting hands on her and, you know, Ray shoving Bruce down the stairs. Like, it's really fucked up. It really says something about our society, but particularly about that relationship. And Tori's job should be therapy. Going to it, not giving it, just so we're
yeah. I was last month at I moderated a panel at the ATX TV festival. Great festival. Everyone should go. Called Dangerous mm-hmm. Women. And one of the people, I'm trying to find her name now and I can't, I'm sorry, but it was a showrunner on the CW's Nancy Drew. And she was telling a story about how, I mean, speaking of cutting away, there was a scene where Nancy is like getting down with a guy and they wanted to have a shot where she pulls her skirt above her knee, like to mm-hmm. indicate consent that he continue uh-huh. what he's doing. And the network was like, you can't have that. And so she's like, you know, this is what the notes we're still getting, that like sex is fine to show, but not enthusiastic consent parts. And that's all I could think during Reva's call, which, like, all of this, you know, saying that this is okay, but Donna choosing affirmatively to have consensual sex on her terms is not. This is rape culture. Like, let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, and she was in a plane to yeah. an island.
Yes.
Hello?
Piloted by a guy who basically was saying, it is my expectation that when we land, you will fuck me.
And that starts in the pilot, by the way. Expect to spend the night. Like, okay, right. Bubble wall guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway, good interrogation. That is bullshit.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Reva.
Yeah. Let's hear our final call.
Hey, this is Gina, who has been listening for many, many years now. And I just, not just a couple months ago, started re-binge listening to all the 90210 episodes. And it proved a little bit too much for me because the other night I had a nightmare that Brian Austin Green was strangling me and woke myself up yelling, help me, help me, someone help me.
No.
And then I was really worried that I'd woken up all the Brooklyn neighbors by yelling that. And then I spent an hour wondering why none of my Brooklyn neighbors were actually coming to help me. But I also have realized yet again upon re-listening to the later seasons that my initial reaction of loving Dylan and loving Kelly and really believing they belong together was incredibly misguided. And I think this explains a lot about how disappointing my 20s were in general, that I really held Kelly up as a role model. So, yeah, that's, thanks for opening my eyes to that one. But just I wanted to thank you both because you bring me enormous amounts of weekly comfort. And when I need additional comfort through difficult points in my life, I just go back and listen again. Thank you so much for existing. You are amazing. And as someone who was exactly the right age to be watching all of this when it came out, having lived through it the first time, reliving it with you, sometimes over and over again, is just the best thing in the entire world. Thank you so much. And I hope that you are both having an amazing day.
That's so nice. Not the part about your neighbors, but the rest
of
it.
Yeah, no, you don't live on 76th Street. I would have come for you.
None of my business. That's Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Thank you to all of our callers. This was so much fun. We will for sure do this again. The hotline remains open.
210.
Thank you.
920-HO-99.
Thank you.
4699. Next time on Again With This, it's back to regular episodes, sort of, because we'll be talking about the two-hour megasode titled No Shit, Great Sexpectations. So at least the titling conventions remain consistently offensive. Also consistently offensive are visual aids. You can assume a content warning for those on every regular recap-based episode of Again With This, and you will find years and years of those at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And the number you and your fellow listeners used to help us make this episode will still be active. 210-920-4699. That's 210-920-HO-99. Get into it. We're definitely doing another one of these episodes. I'm Rotary Dial Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is 20-foot curly kitchen cord Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is novelty Vader helmet handset David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
You got to send me that clip, and I will make it the outgoing message.
Okay.